And success is one of those things that it's a moving target. It's interesting in that really all we're looking for is, I think, happiness. Mm-hmm. And to get it, we want certain things. And we think those things will make us happy. And along the way, if we're really lucky, we will realize that happiness in itself is the end goal. And that makes the rest of the success journey, if you will, so much more fun and so much more about other people and how you can impact them.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com.
Enjoy the show.
Welcome everyone to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. If you love to learn, be inspired, and succeed, we're here to speak and teach. I'm your host, Ben Albert. I believe if you're not living, you're dying. If you're not growing, you're withering. And if you're not engaged, you can turn this off right now. Because we here at LST are lifelong learners. And listen, I'm not your guru. I'm an ordinary guy on a journey to learn from the experts. My goal is to host each conversation with a beginner's mindset, learn, and let the experts speak and teach their truths. Join us! Oh yeah, and don't forget to subscribe. This episode is brought to you completely free. Get some stake in the game here. My fee for the show only takes a few moments. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Bonus points. Please leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right, let's get started. Welcome everyone to Learn, Speak, Teach on the Real Business Connections Network. I am here with April Sprints. April, what's happening? How are you? I'm excited today.
Hey, you know what? It is a fantastic, beautiful day here in South Florida. I hope it is wherever you are. And I'm thrilled to be here.
Dude, I'm in New York and it's beautiful. We got spring and summer now. So things are looking up. Things are looking up. And the lilacs are coming out. We got a lot of lilacs in my region here. So
love it.
Yeah, I'll read the short. I gave the short version of the bio. You are the creator of Generosity Culture. I'm going to ask you a question about that in a second. Founder of Driven Outcomes, you are a business accelerator, a speaker, author of Magic Blue Rocks, The Secret to Doing Anything. I'm intrigued about that as well. A book about life-changing impact of a winning mindset. You're an Air Force vet. You're what I would call a culture queen, among many things. But outside of this bio, April, how do you describe yourself? Who are you outside of maybe your professional career? What drives you? Tell me a little bit more about April.
So I think I just said it before we jumped in here. A five-year-old with a bank account. Someone who sees the wonder and interest in everything, wants to treat others the way that they want to be treated, have fun, and help as many people as I can.
I love that. A five-year-old with a bank account. Well, have you always been that way? Well, where does that curiosity come from?
You know, it's interesting. I think I was this way as a child in many ways, and I grew up with an extremely humble background. So I became very serious very young. And if you were to have met me at age 18, I would have seemed much more like the 43-year-old I am now than I do today, because I was so serious about finding success and making money and being able to have the life that I want. One of the things that I found, though, was that I had help along the way, people who poured into me and really took an interest in me and helped me do things. And that really shaped my worldview. And success is one of those things that it's a moving target. It's interesting in that really all we're looking for is, I think, happiness. Mm-hmm. And to get it, we want certain things. And we think those things will make us happy. And along the way, if we're really lucky, we will realize that happiness in itself is the end goal. And that makes the rest of the success journey, if you will, so much more fun and so much more about other people and how you can impact them.
I love this. So you indicated you had mentorship or just people in your life that helped you discover this. who are some of those people? What role did they play? Or maybe just lessons learned or failures, however you want to take it. Lessons learned, failures, mentors. How'd you learn this stuff?
All of it the hard way, because that's what I like to do. I think yes. I learned the most from failures, doing things the wrong way the first time. Mentors were huge. The biggest one in my life is a woman by the name of Sue Harper, who came into my life when I was 9 years old. Again, I talked about having a tough upbringing. My mother had a substance abuse problem, and she was the head of HR where my mom worked. And she happened to come in and explain to me that my mom was going to rehab. And in that, not only go above and beyond, because an HR director doesn't normally do that, or a head of HR, but she took an interest in me and said she wanted to be my friend and she wanted to be there for me. And she really thought that I was special and going to be able to do amazing things. And in what was literally just a Tuesday for her, right? This is just a regular day. She would have done this for any child.
Yes.
She changed my life, and she made my life a totally different thing. And candidly, the generosity culture is based on that gift of generosity from her and the way that shaped the way I saw the world and business and everything else. And so she and other mentors along the way were instrumental. And then when it comes to failures, I think that failure taught me more about mindset than anything. When something bad happened or something that I really wanted did not come to fruition, in many cases, that ended up being the best thing that could have ever happened to me. And I wouldn't understand it for weeks, months, or years later.
Walk us through one of those failures, one of those moments where you just wanted to take the fedora off, throw it, you know, just... I'm done. And then obviously, like, what did you learn from hitting that bump in the road?
So I think one of the biggest ones at the time, and I write about this in Magic Blue Rocks, was when I wanted to go into college was a dream that I started very young. No one in my family had graduated college. When I was younger, no one had graduated high school. So it was a really big deal, and I knew I had to pay for it myself and just assumed scholarships would be the way that I did it. Mm-hmm. And I turned down scholarships locally because I wanted to go to a very specific school for their broadcasting program. And while I got in to that program, I only got a very small partial scholarship. And for me, it seemed like the entire dream of going to college was just gone because I'd missed the deadlines for other places. I didn't know how to pay for school. The amount that I would have owed after the scholarship may as well have been $1 million a year, given where I was financially. And because of that, I'm going to circumvent some other things that happened, but I ended up going into the military, which is not something I had ever considered. And I was, you know, a little bit like Private Benjamin, an old 1980s movie about, you know, the blonde Barbie looking girl that was not going to be the person you thought could defend the country. But what ended up happening was being in the military, not only expanded my worldview, allowed me to travel. I met amazing people. I learned things I never would have learned in a more traditional route, but I got to do the career that I wanted right away. And they also, you know, financed my college career, not only undergrad, but graduate school. I would have never have thought of going that route in a million years, but I would never go back and do it the other way if I had the option, because it was such a better route for me.
Yeah, you would have never expected that route. It happened for you, though. It ended up being the perfect way to go. And nowadays, you are the queen behind generosity culture. Tell me, so I have a gist, and I'm sure the listeners, they have their own definition of generosity, but what exactly is a generosity culture?
Well, it's funny because when I use the word generosity, a lot of times people grab for their wallet. Like, she's not going to be asking me for money, is she? And I'm not. I'm asking for something far more valuable, which is your time. Because the principles of the generosity culture are to pour into your people and your clients and your community. And if you do those three things, if you build a business based on that foundation of those three principles, you will scale unbelievably fast. You will be a viable business regardless of what's going on in the economy and what's happening in the world, because you create these amazing symbiotic relationships with those three groups that make your company unstoppable. And when I say pour into your people, I mean that we're always looking for our people to treat our clients a certain way. And the best way we can help them do that is by modeling it to them, not telling them what to do, but I'm going to treat you as well as I want you to treat our clients. I'm going to give you my time. I'm going to care about who you are as an individual. I'm going to help empower you to pursue your dreams, whether those are with my company or not, right? Because if I keep you as happy as possible, if you leave later, that's fine because you're only going to refer better people. And not better than you are, but better people than I would ever have gotten another way. And you're only going to continue to think highly of the company. So it's a win all the way around. And because that's being modeled, just like children, right? They do what they see their parents do versus what their parents tell them to do. You're then going to treat everyone else that way, the other employees, the folks that you're working with from a client perspective. And it becomes just this amazing relationship where everything dovetails into another. And same with the community, whether we are an online only business or we're brick and mortar or we are some hybrid of those, we have a community, be it local, regional, global, it doesn't matter. So if we are doing things to make that community better, then again, we all are able to have prosperity together.
What exactly would that look like in the micro level? Like if I were to don't turn this off right now, but if at the moment I turn this off, I'm done with my car ride and I'm walking into work, I'm walking into a client meeting, I'm walking into my homestead where my beautiful family is. What does this look like on a day-to-day?
So you can develop and have your own generosity culture at any level by continuously asking yourself one simple question. How can I help? It's as simple as that.
I love it. And the answer is going to be different based on the circumstance. But as long as you have that, for example, let's say you're going to a seminar, maybe you volunteer for the seminar, how can I help? Before you know it, you're actually meeting some of the leaders at that seminar rather than just showing up, trying to take, since you had the how, before you know it, you're a volunteer and you're like a rock star there. Cool. What were the other two main focuses in the generosity culture?
So I actually went through all three, which was to pour into your people, your clients, and your community.
People, client, community. Got it. Got it. This is why I recommend people take notes. People, clients.
What's new to you?
It is. It is. And I recommend everyone take notes, you know, draw a line down. If you're driving, you can't. I know that. If you're at the gym, you can't. But draw a line down this sheet of paper. Maybe write down a couple of notes from things that April has said. And then on that other side, write down some personal realizations you're having. That's what I'm going to do after I listen. But right now, I'm being present with you today. What are some of the issues and problems that people run into when they have that what's in it for me attitude, when they aren't coming with, you know, a generosity, they're not embodying generosity? They might still be successful and make a lot of sales, for example. Is there major issues you see with people that have just the icky opposite of generosity?
Well, I think that a few things come into play. Number one, it's never enough. They're never happy. They're never satisfied. It does not feel good. They may have what seems on the outside like success, but if they're not happy, is that really success? Right. If it's never enough, if they still feel like it could be taken away from them at any moment, that they're never going to be where they're trying to get to, I would argue that's not success. That may look on the outside like success, but doesn't feel like success. You wouldn't want that life. And I think that that's very prevalent when somebody's getting it that way. The other thing is, I find that when people are like, you know, they say nice guys finish last. Well, I don't think that's true in the least. I think you're only watching a snippet of the race, because one of those folks that is doing those counterintuitive take type things, when they're winning, it's for a short period of time. You watch for a little longer and that always comes full circle. I've never seen it not happen. Not once.
Let me ask you this then, because I kind of want to redefine, you know, nice guys finish last. I more think that pushovers finish last.
Great point. Yes, 100%.
So talk about how you can be nice and generous and not finish last. And maybe there's a difference between being a pushover and being someone who embodies generosity, correct?
100%. And I think one word separates the two, and that word is boundaries. So when someone is a pushover, they will do anything for anyone, whether it's within reason or not. You can be incredibly generous and incredibly kind, but also realize that, let's say, for example, you've given a lot of your time to someone and they're not taking ownership and they're not really making a difference for themselves. The next time they ask you for your time, then what I do is give homework, if you will. I'm like, I am happy to give you more of my time when you show me that the time I've already invested is beneficial to you. This is how I'll know this, this, and this. Make sense?
It does make sense. Ooh, and going into the longer part of your bio that I didn't say today, you've actually lived this. This isn't just theory that you came up with out of the blue. You were top of the leaderboard as a sales executive in pretty much every career in every industry you tackled, but you did it in the generosity kind of relationship-based giver's way. A lot of people might be surprised by that. They see the top person at the company and they're hard to reach. They're never mentoring anybody. You kind of wonder how they even made their success. You were doing it the other way. You were a giver and you were still top of the leaderboard. We've already talked about this, but I'm just hammering down on it. Like, what were you doing different that allowed you to be at the highest level? But give time generously, but still actually make the income you deserved. Is there anything specific we didn't touch on that you were doing?
So we touched on it, but I'm going to touch on it in a different way. And I will tell you that in a lot of ways, me becoming the top salesperson in those organizations was luck of the fact that before I was in sales, I was in service. I came into those businesses, not all of them, but initially I learned the business before I went to sell. And so I was in the area that a lot of us call client service or client management. So I was always dealing with client issues and problems. And what was interesting is as soon as I'd solve a really big problem for our clients, because I really cared, they'd want to buy something. It never failed. So I was actually selling in a client services role and asked to move to sales, because I was outselling many of the account executives. And that is the difference, is that I learned that helping other people will ultimately always lead to your success. So it was very second nature for me to fix things and make things better and pour into other people. And the other thing was, coming from that background of having been in client services, I didn't have that lone wolf, I do this all myself mentality. Okay. So pouring into others and mentoring others just made sense, because I was not the company. Those relationships were vital. So it's like a bank account. You don't expect to withdraw money if you haven't put money in. Mm-hmm. So for me, I was always seeing how can I put money in that sense, right? And then trusting that it would be there when I needed it. So that made the biggest difference in the world. And for those folks that are just the top people and they don't help anyone, I think it's one of two things. It's either, again, they're only the top person for a short period of time, or two, you've decided that they're that person because you're intimidated and you're afraid to ask. But if you asked, they would help you.
There's a little bit of scarcity there, that you're seeing them at the top of the ladder and they're untouchable. Have we actually asked them for help yet?
Well, people can be very afraid to ask for help, I think.
Yeah, I'm that way. I've been there.
Are you? Yeah?
I've been. So nothing that I've done, I did the correct way. And I've joked
That's
about this before. Oh my! If there's a way to do things quickly, I don't know it. I always find a difficult, confusing, and I've never in my life walked into the role and been number one, but I've always been coachable and I've always been honest. And I am a testament that what you're saying is true. The moment I was no longer feeling the scarcity and the imposter syndrome, and I started asking people like you for advice and for help, I literally tripled my mindset, my happiness. My income didn't triple, but I did replace my sales executive income as an entrepreneur, learning from people like April. So back in the day, we joked about this before we started, I was new, this was my first ever sales role. And I actually was top of the leaderboard first month out of the blue. Everyone was really pissed off.
Congrats.
And I had no clue what I was doing. The only thing I was doing that people weren't doing is I was working harder and I was asking more questions. I was very non-assumptive. And it was very much an always be close, like yes, no tie downs, take them down a similar, like a straight line kind of thing, handle objections. And by asking questions, I feel like I was just more consultative. And I kind of feel like I was letting the customers kind of convince themselves a little bit more. But what's crazy is the better I got at being in that culture, I got my numbers went up, but I feel like I got worse at sales. Because I was thinking, I was thinking, always be closing. And then I stopped asking good questions. I started making good assumptions. So we joked about this before we started. So I just want to pass it to you. What are your thoughts on that kind of scenario? What are your thoughts on always be closing? What's your opinion?
I think that always be closing is incredibly outdated. Sounds really catchy and cool. I'd like to replace it with always be helping. Because I have never had an experience with being sold to that I have enjoyed, right? We all like to buy, but we don't want to be sold. And if somebody is genuinely trying to help you and you can feel it, that's why the always be closing gets to me. People can feel your intent. They know if the sale is about you or it's about them. And when you're asking those questions and you're looking to genuinely help them, whether that's your product and service or not, they can feel that intent. And that means that if your product is right for them, they will absolutely do it. If it isn't right for them, and I'm going to tell you right now, because they can feel your intent, the moment they run into someone that your product or service will be right for, they will tell them about you. Because what they will remember is that they felt genuinely cared for and helped, and how rare that is.
You make them feel genuinely cared for and helped. They might not be a good fit, but since they trust you and see you as someone that actually is looking to help and provide value, they might know someone else who's a good fit. And then you've
Or they'll run into them. Yeah. And they'll remember you. I got more referrals from folks that I said, I don't think what I have is right for you for this reason, or this reason that you stated. But I think a competitor, a different product, a whatever would help you. I know someone. I'll put you in contact with them because I called it cooperation. They may have been my competition, but if they were best for who I was trying to serve, I'm going to make that introduction. I would get more referrals from those people I didn't serve than the people I did because they'd be like, it doesn't matter if what you need is what she has. She'll send you to whatever you need. And so, that's rare.
That's so tough. And I do the same thing, but I find it so tough to just kind of like leave it out to, you know, energy to attract the referrals back to you. Are you asking for referrals or is there a way that you frame like if you ever need anything, you're nodding no. So
no.
Talk about that a little more.
Let's look at this, and I don't mean this in the sales way, right? Because in the sales way, we talk about hunting and farming, and hunting is if you go prospect, and farming is if you get more business from someone you're already doing business with. But let's think of it as farming in literally the agricultural sense. And let's say we're planting a bunch of carrots, and planting a bunch of carrots is helping a bunch of people, right? You plant a whole bunch of them, you put the seeds there, and then, you know, you water them and you give them some fertilizer and you pull up the weeds and you do the things. Do you go, you seed, I need you to bring me a carrot? Or do you do all the right things in a big way and trust that you will have enough carrots come to you? It's the same thing.
Wow, I'm just laughing. This is brilliant. Let's go to beginner mindset level though.
Okay.
I'm leaving money on the table if I'm not closing. I don't know if they'll ever come back. I've got bills to pay and a family to feed. How do I rewire my, 'cause I understand this might work. I know it does work, but some might wonder, like I understand this might work, but this seems really hard for me. Like, how do I reframe that mindset?
look, that makes sense. And it makes sense that it feels hard. And sometimes mindset is hard because it's so simple, but it is a consistent daily way of looking at things. And a generosity mindset, if you do it little by little, will prove itself out to you. So if you are the always be closing person and you gotta, you know, you gotta sell your cars and you've got to, you know, put your little girl in gymnastics, no problem. I just want you to start asking yourself a question. As you're doing your normal process, keep asking yourself, how could I help more? So do your normal process, but ask that question, how could I help more? And little by little, as you put yourself out there and you help a little more and you get these great benefits, it's going to become easier and easier to take that leap. You don't have to do massive action and a 180 and be a generous person tomorrow. You can take small, consistent steps by asking yourself, how could I help them more? In every sale. And maybe it's if, again, we're going to use the car dealership thing, because man, those are my folks that remind me the most of always be closing, right? What kind of payment you're trying to get into. Let me go talk to the manager. Maybe for you, taking that small step is, I'm only going to negotiate with them on the price for X amount of minutes. I am not going to put them through this whole rigmarole. I'm still going to follow our process, but I'm going to see if I can't get to the number they need quicker by doing something differently. And see how that works. See if they're not more likely to send their friends and family to come buy a vehicle for you. See if you don't have more fun doing it. See if you don't enjoy your own process more when you're actually making an impact instead of just a sale.
Actually making an impact instead of just a sale. I love this. And most of my listeners, they are small business owners, entrepreneurs, salespeople. They're revenue driven, but a lot of them are in leadership roles as well. Now, all of this is going to apply to leadership in your team, I imagine. But let's go, you know, 1,000 foot and talk about how we can utilize this as a strong leader in our workplace culture.
Okay. Go ahead.
So I have a team of 15. Let's go smaller scale, because by then I feel like there's needs to be leaders within the leadership. Let's go very small. So I have a team of 4, and I actually don't feel like I know what I'm doing. I feel like I'm only in the leadership role because of seniority and hard work, but I've never been in a role like this before. But I want to bring the best out of my team. And I don't quite know where to start because this is new to me.
Okay, this is a great place to start. A great place to start in admitting this to yourself. And then the next thing I'd tell you to do, which is scary, I tell people to do a lot of scary things, but I promise there'll be a benefit. You sit your 4 people down and you say to them what you just said to me. This is my first leadership role. I really want to do a wonderful job for you. And what would really help me do that is for me to understand from all of you, both as a group and we'll meet individually, what is important to you? What are the things that you would do if you were in my role? Because sure, I'm the leader, I'm in charge, but that doesn't mean I have all the best ideas. Our best ideas are going to come together as a group. And the best work that we're gonna do isn't gonna be because of me, it's gonna be because of us. So help me understand how I can empower you to be the best you that you are. And then when you're one-on-one, find out more about them as people. Where do they want to go? What do they want to do? So you'll know, what are the things I can delegate that will help this person develop into the role they want to go into? Where are the areas that I can coach and help this person? Because I may be a new leader, but I know a lot about the job that they're doing. And again, all I'm describing for you is, again, that question, how can I help?
Can I help?
So how do I help each individual? You know what the mission is, what you're trying to do for your workplace. When you understand the people and how you incorporate them into it, you're all more successful.
I love it. April, I just realized I did all the listeners a disservice in not presenting how do you help them. Are you working with individuals? Are you working with large corporations? Tell me a little bit about the people you help on a day-to-day basis.
Absolutely. So the first thing I always like to go to is, how can I help folks with the least skin in the game for them? Okay. So I have a podcast called Pouring Into Your Business, where I do both information about businesses and for small business owners, as well as large corporations, leadership, that kind of thing, and separate episodes that are only about mindset, and they're 10 minutes or less to help folks. I do a live show every week on LinkedIn that's called 10 Minutes to Win, and it's actionable mindset tips. And I also look to post and give as many resources as I can to help folks become the best version of themselves, whether that's from a business perspective, mindset perspective. I think those two are very interwoven. When I work with companies and accelerate them, they are usually businesses between $1 to $5 million a year in revenue if they're a startup, or all the way up to $100 million in revenue if they're a little more mature of a business. And I do that mostly because I can make the biggest difference for a company of that size in really helping them grow and scale in meaningful ways.
Love it. So you're omnipresent. If I need help, I can come. I can watch the lives. I can listen to the podcast. I can read the book. What was it? Blue Rocks.
Yeah, Magic Blue Rocks.
So when I hear Magic Blue Lock, I'm thinking of like Breaking Bad or something.
Right. Well, here's what's funny. To be completely candid, the name means everything to me, and from a marketing perspective, probably a fail. Right. Okay. It's one of those books that people will end up knowing the name of it because it helped them, not because it was well named. Okay. But Magic Blue Rocks actually describes my very first business when I was 6 years old and found out that I was poor and decided to solve it myself. I created Magic Blue Rocks that I sold at school.
Whoa. Okay. Slow down. You're 6 years old. Mm-hmm. You have this realization that you're not like all the wealthier kids.
Mm-hmm.
And you start your own little entrepreneurial. Can we break that down a little bit more?
So, sure.
Again, that's very long time ago, of course, but wow, you're an entrepreneur from the age of six. What walked me through
exactly
that? Yeah,
and I didn't even see it that way.
Yeah, no, not at all. You're just like, I want to make money. I want to do things. So what was the service you were offering exactly again?
So basically, I found out that I was poor at school from one of the smartest children I knew, and he proved it to me through a series of questions. It was actually almost like a consultative sale, and he sold me on the fact that, man, we were in a bad way. And I felt like my mom couldn't solve this, or she would have already. So I wanted to do it covertly on my own. And it's funny, I really liked shows about entrepreneurs, even at age six. My favorite at the time was a show called The Jeffersons, about a gentleman who owned dry cleaners and he moved on up. And I was like, this is what I need to do. I need a business. And then I was like, but I'm six. I don't even have a bike. Okay. I could sell something. Mm-hmm. That's what I could do. I could sell something. And I couldn't find anything in my home that I thought was valuable enough to sell to people that I was also willing to part with. And I go outside and I'm just trying to think, and I see all this gravel in my driveway. And while I had been in the house, the only thing I picked up was these two random blue markers that I'd found. I had them in my pocket, and I look at the rocks and I'm like, if I color them blue, they'll be special. Yeah. And here's what I'll do. I will make them magic because I'm six. So I figure I can still do this because I really did believe in magic.
Yes.
And I thought, I can do anything I believe I can do, even if grownups say I can't. And this happened to me a lot as a kid. They'd be like, well, you can't go outside. And I'd take the screen out and go out of the window. And I'd be like, well, I guess you were wrong because I totally did go outside. And I thought I could put that into the rocks. And then anyone who had them could do anything they believed they could do. So from such a young age, I'm like, I will give my mindset to you in the form of this little magic blue rock. And then took it to school to sell it. It was a huge hit. Badly priced, though. I priced them at a quarter, and lunch was 80 cents. So a lot of kids decided to buy the rocks and didn't have money for lunch, which is how I got found out. And they shut the business down the first day. But I know it was a big sale, though, like made $5, which was really a big deal at that age. But what I realized, because my mom came to school and talked to me about, you know, I could tell she was ashamed that we were poor, but that she didn't want me to be ashamed that we were poor. And in that moment, I really made the decision on two things. One, I'm going to make money until money doesn't matter. I mean, like, just the visceral, I am doing this. Mm. And the second was, when my mom talked about the fact that we were poor, like, her eyes welled up with tears, and I never used to see her cry. And I thought, I am not going to focus on the things that make people cry. I'm going to focus on the things I want. And those were two very strong mindset techniques that I didn't even know about at the time that made all the difference in the way I lived the rest of my life.
Wow. I love it. And then you went and you did obtain the money and you did obtain the success, but you decided to leave that. You decided to leave your was it corporate level role?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I was in corporate.
To do your own thing. Tell me about mm-hmm. that transition, kind of the reasoning or the why, or when the rubber hit sure. the road and you're like, I'm doing something different now.
You know, it was interesting because I was in a very successful startup. They actually had a $7 billion IPO, and this was after I left, but helped be part of that growth and do really exciting things at a really great company. And then I realized after I'd been doing it for a few years that being the top salesperson was not what was fun to me. What was fun to me was mentoring and helping other people become the top salesperson. Mm. I got so much more joy out of their wins and their success than I did my own. And, you know, this can be hard to believe when you're trying to make enough money. Yes. But you get money until money doesn't matter much sooner than you think you do. You don't need as much as you think you do to live the exact life you always wanted to. And that was very surprising to me. And once money wasn't a motivator like that, I was looking for what drove me. Where was the juice, right? And it was always in helping people. And when I was helping in one industry, selling, helping a certain group of people be successful with this service I had, I wasn't able to impact enough. And so I decided to leave and start my own company. Candidly, not really knowing what I was going to be doing other than helping. I was very much like, I'm going to jump out of the plane and build the parachute on the way down. And everyone was like, good luck. We think you're crazy.
When was this again? How long ago?
Almost 5.5 years ago now.
Awesome. Keep going. Yeah. I just wanted to give a little context.
Yeah, sure. Sure. So I just wanted to help people, and I wasn't sure what shape that would take. I don't advise you to do that if you're starting a business as an entrepreneur. It's not the right way. It's just the way that worked for me. And the people who needed my help actually ended up defining what my business would offer.
Ooh, walk me through that a little bit. What did you think you were offering? You had... You felt it in your heart. You're heart-centric. You mm-hmm. want to help. You know that you're going to be successful. But it sounds like you didn't have a predefined target market business plan. Where did you think you were going versus where did you actually land?
So it's interesting. I had I tell people a lot, focus on the what, not the how.
Yes.
And my big what was, I'm going to help people.
Right.
And the how I thought, you know, I'll help people learn to sell. And I'll help people learn to speak because I had a background in broadcasting. And I thought, that's what I can do. I can train them, help them, whatever. So I get to work on this and I do a lot of the things that an early entrepreneur will do, which is what I call hamster work. You're like, it's like you're on a hamster wheel and you're running like crazy, but you're not really going anywhere, but you feel good about yourself because you are running, right?
Yes. It's good exercise. It's good exercise.
I developed a beautiful website, some great videos. I still didn't know what I was offering. I still didn't know who my clients would be. I was just like, you know, really focused on all this busy work. And then I had someone reach out to me who needed my help who said, hey, April, I have a friend who has sold one company very successfully and has another company that he started for his family that is failing. And it is failing by big amounts, $500,000 a year. He's pouring into this of his own money, right? Mm-hmm. Can you help? And I was like, yeah. I was just like, yes. He was like, well, let me tell you the industry. Doesn't matter. Can you do this? Yes. And now luckily, I wasn't lying because in my corporate career, like I told you that I got into sales from first being in client services. Both when I was in client services and when I was in sales, I would help turn around failing divisions of the company. Or if there would be a big issue and it wasn't anyone's responsibility, I would decide I was in charge of it. And people would let me because I would be able to help and to fix it. Mm. So I had done it before, just never on that scale. And so I went in and took that company from failing to profitability in 6 months. And within 2 years, they sold for a good 8 figures and just changed everything about what I saw my company doing. And I thought, okay, this is what we'll do. And they told me, I didn't tell them, if that makes sense. Like everyone's like, identify your target market. I say, ask people.
How can I serve you? How can I help?
How can I help? Right? Like, so a lot of the things that I say that sound like wisdom are hard earned wisdom from having done it the wrong way and figured it out later.
Yes. And you have grit. I mean, I forget exactly what you said, but you said, I decided I would take leadership on this project. It's like, you didn't ask permission for that opportunity. No. It sounds like you're just, no. You just decided. So you don't even ask permission for the role or permission to, you're just like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to help. I'm going to take this and people are going to want to follow. I commend you. I don't even know if I have a question. That's just incredible.
Well, thank you.
A lot of people want to ask permission.
You know, I don't know if people want to ask permission or if they feel like they have to.
And feel like they have to.
I am a big fan of ask forgiveness. Because if you know in your heart of hearts that you are trying to help, that you are doing the right thing, that you're guided the right way, and let's be honest, if you have to ask yourself if you are or you aren't, you know the answer. But when you're really guided to do the right thing, then go for it. And part of this comes from the military too. I was very blessed in having that experience because they call this, it's funny, my friend David Marlowe was in the Marines and he reminded me what this was called. I remember doing it, but I didn't know what it's called, a command decision. And basically it is the empowerment they give you in the military that if you make the wrong decision, or I'm sorry, the right decision with the wrong information, meaning everything you had, you made the right decision with what you knew, you are never in trouble. Because they want you to keep moving things forward and they want you to make a choice and they want you to take care of people.
Yes.
And I believe that I just continued with that mentality in my corporate career. And it's interesting how in the place of knowing what to do, people tend to follow the most confident person. Right or wrong, the one who looks like they know what they're doing. So if you do have that intent to help others and you believe you can do it, people will listen.
For anyone who's like me, that's a little bit quieter and sometimes nervous to take that leadership role, if you have that, how can I help, that curiosity, you'll be able to find that person and then you can be their right man, right hand, you know, man or gal. So if anyone's like 100%. Me and they're like, I don't see myself as front and center leader on the mic. Well, if you're looking at who's helping and who's actually bringing the team together, you can point to them and whether they know or not, they're basically being elected. I found a lot of the best leaders don't even realize they're in leadership. It's people start electing them because they start observing and they go, I don't care about this, 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 and this. You're the person for the job because of all these reasons that you basically went over today, April. All those reasons kind of just define a leader, whether they know it or they, whether they know it or not, you know?
100%. Well, and I would say a good leader will see someone like you who speaks less. And as someone who speaks a lot, I will say the people who speak the least say the most profound things. Because those of us who talk a lot, about half of it's kind of filler and garbage. Yes. But then there's the really good stuff. Folks who speak less, think more and listen more, which is way more important. And I will tend to gravitate towards those people. And I want those folks to talk to me because I know that whatever they're going to share with me will be genius. And a good leader will see that in people because they're the most valuable.
I want to add an asterisk because I'm agreeing with everything. And you said, you know, people that talk the most, a lot of it ends up being filler or garbage. And I said, yes, right at that point. And it's everything you're saying is actually not filler. Literally everything coming out of your mouth's perfect. I was saying yes, that even as a quiet person, sometimes I'm an auditory learner and I'll talk. And then I'll have like 10 seconds of gold and I'll be like, okay, let's write down the 10 seconds of gold. Sometimes you need to be auditory and you need to work through these concepts. And then you'll get at a level where April is at and where I ultimately want to be, where everything you say end up, it comes out better and it comes out right because of practice. But none of this is possible if we don't give ourselves permission to go out and get in, go out and try and go out and start helping and get in the repetition. That's my experience. What do you think?
I think that's wonderful, except you were extremely kind and flattering to me. I don't know if that's necessarily all true, because I hear myself and I know sometimes it's filler and garbage, but the intent to help is always there.
And we're getting really micro on this, but it goes back to small talk. So I'm not a big small talker, but sometimes in the small talk is the rapport, is the trust, is the connection, is the growth. So sometimes we might be talking, we're like, I'm over explaining, or I'm over talking, or I'm talking too much about my dog. People want to know about your dog as well. They want to see your cat photo. And it's almost giving us permission not to always have to be Yoda or be, you know, Morpheus and have the perfect thing to say at all times.
Sometimes, I love it.
Sometimes the garbage has a bow on it, right?
You know, that is very wise.
I'm making this up as I go, April.
I absolutely agree with that. And I think that if you can ask the questions that get your team to share the cat pictures and the dog pictures and the things that really matter to them, you get better insight to them as people. And you then know how you can be of service and how you can empower them because you understand them and what's important.
Yes. April, we're running low on time, so we're going to go to the rapid fire round. And the way this works, short, sweet, a lot of them are either or, fill in the blank questions. The points don't matter. The answers are completely subjective to you, but we're going to go rapid fire. Yeah, it's I say it's Family Feud mixed with Whose Line Is It Anyway? It's Family Feud that it's rapid fire, but it's Whose Line Is It Anyways that honestly, it's subjective. You can say whatever you want.
Okay.
So it's points don't matter. You're going to win anyways. You're going against yourself. So I guess you have to win, right?
Let's do it.
Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Beer or wine?
Wine.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Dogs. Favorite guilty pleasure, something that you're just like, I love this on the weekend kind of thing.
Hermiting.
Hermiting. Define hermiting. Is that just staying at home, just being with yourself?
Like, I love my home and I love my dog. And so I will hide from the world sometimes and just spend time in my own energy. I love to hermit.
Okay. So we talked so much about generosity culture and some of the things that we shouldn't do, things we should do. If you could just wave a magic wand and something negative just were to disappear, what is something really negative that permeates in business that you wish you could just wave a magic wand and get rid of entirely?
Fear.
Fear. Good answer. Okay. So I'm not supposed to say good answer. It's completely subjective. Let's give 1 to 3 pieces of learning. You can name drop your own if you'd like, but 1 to 3 pieces of learning that'll help me take this information and actually start applying it into my life. If I were to go listen to a podcast book, if I were to YouTube, if I were to go learn more, where should I go to continue this knowledge?
Okay. One, I would tell you to read. And this piece of advice is from a gentleman named Carrie Daigle. And it's actually from his mama, Daigle. Okay. And it is to continue to read, because if you don't read, you are no better than someone who is illiterate because they can't read. So why would you not choose to and broaden your horizons and learn more? My second would be, there is no work you can do that gives you a better ROI for your life and your prosperity and your happiness than on mindset. So I would encourage you to work on your mindset every single day. The third piece of advice is from Esther and Abraham Hicks. And it is that there is nothing more important than the way that you feel and your happiness. And if you stay in tune with that, then you will find all of the things that will lead to what we have been conditioned to think are success. But because you're happy and you feel good, you'll already be there.
I love this. One more big question is, if they haven't been big enough. So massive billboard, everyone in the world's going to see it. So all cultures, all genders, all races. If you could put one message on that billboard, knowing that everyone in the world will see that message and take it in, what would you put on that billboard?
4 words. I believe in you.
Ooh, okay. Drop the mic. We're done. This is perfect. I believe in you. Thank you. April, tell us one more time. People are going to want to stay in touch. They're going to want to follow you. They're going to want to connect with you. They're going to want to learn more. They're excited. Where should they go? What should their next step be?
So if you go to my website, drivenoutcomes.com, there's all sorts of free resources. You can connect with me on all the social channels and whatnot. And you can also reach out to me personally there if you'd like to.
Love it. Show notes, guys. It's there for you. You don't have to take notes, but you should have took notes. If you didn't take notes and you were driving, I think this is the kind of episode that you listen to 2-3 times, because I know personally, I missed parts. So I'm going to have to go back, re-listen, check out the show notes, stay in touch with April. I haven't read your book yet, but the next time we talk, I will have it read, I promise.
Oh, thank you.
And thank you again for taking the time and generously coming on my show. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. This has been awesome.
Thanks again for listening to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. You need to go subscribe if you haven't yet. This show is completely free. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right. Thanks once more for listening to LST. I am so grateful. Talk to you soon.